and welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, rbnrepublicbroadcasting.org. It's the after-dinner mint of free speech, because I just fed my dogs breakfast, and they need a mint for their breath. Do they actually? I mean, maybe not. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. Don't worry about the extension. The operator is standing by. So this is part two of the Patrick and Jeremy show. And Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on again, Patrick. We had a fascinating discussion last night on In Plain Sight. And I think we left off talking about what the sanctions on America look like in light of Russia and China dominating the globe through Belt and Road. And there's nothing on the shelves that's made in America anymore. So we could very well be looking at the shelves of Walmart tripling in prices, maybe even five times the amount that it did cost. How's that going to affect everyday Americans?
Yeah. So the United States, it imports huge amounts of stuff. Well, you could say that... Uh-oh. Hey. What are you up to? Don't do that.
Sorry about that. It's nothing important.
You could say that that there's mutual dependency. If you have... the United States dependent on Chinese imports, for instance, and China is dependent on American markets, right? And you could say that. And, you know, 40 years ago, that was certainly very true with Japan. Japan, it was very dependent on the American market. It exported to an extent to Europe and other countries, but really not that much. The level of dependency of Japan on the United States in, you know, up until the 1980s was very, very high. Of course, America, to what extent did it utilize this leverage that it might have had? It utilized it not economically. It utilized it for foreign policy. It told Japan, okay, you can't have a foreign policy. You just follow us. And the Japanese said, okay. And they got fairly rich doing that. The thing about China is I think the United States is way more dependent on Chinese products than China is on American markets, because, and especially with the Belt and Road, because the whole thing about the Belt and Road is this is going to give China access to resources and markets around the world. It already is. I mean, the Belt and Road isn't something that we just talk about in the future. The Belt and Road is already bigger than the World Bank. So a lot of Belt and Road projects are going on, and they're going to be ongoing probably for decades. China's got a lot of capital to work with. So, and the United States, it's not just dependent on Chinese imports, but on imports from a lot of places, you know, Vietnam and India, Bangladesh, other places. China's the big one, but lots of other places. But these various producers of consumer goods, they're scampering, is that the right word, to get into BRICS. They all want to get into BRICS. Thailand, which is usually thought of as pretty pro-American, Thailand is applying to enter BRICS. It's a big country. Indonesia is a very, very big country, and it is likely to want to join BRICS. So you've got this reorientation of the world diplomatically, but also economically. And the BRICS is overshadowing the G7. It's overshadowing the World Bank and the IMF and all of the Western-created institutions that came from the Bretton Woods Conference of 1944 at the end of, you know, towards the end of World War II, and later. These institutions are just being eclipsed by China and Russia led institutions, and it's happening really fast, and a lot of people don't realize it. And so what does the future look like? The future looks like one where America's special status is gone, where the dollar's special status, the dollar's been used as a weapon. And I said this, I think, last week on one of my Boomer Visions. If let's just say you used a guitar or electric guitar or banjo or something, you used it as a weapon, you could probably knock out somebody with it, but it's not going to be good for the guitar. You beat somebody over the head with a guitar, you might knock the person out, but it's not good for the guitar either. And so we've been using the dollar as a weapon. And okay, so maybe we've imposed some pain along the way, but the dollar, having been used as a weapon, is not what it used to be. And is that a good analogy? I don't know. I'll kick it back to you before I go on too much further.
You brought to mind a scene from a very funny movie from my childhood with Clint Eastwood called Every Which Way But Loose. There was a scene where a bar fight broke out and at Clint Eastwood's favorite bar. And the singer of the band just kept playing, you know, the hillbilly, rockabilly country stuff until some aggressive people tried to get up on the stage. Then the singer took his guitar, smashed it over the head of the aggressor, threw the pieces down, reached over, grabbed another guitar, and just kept on playing. So you may use the dollar as a weapon, but you may have to move to something else if you want to keep on, with your routine. It's just a funny scene that came to mind.
Did that movie have the orangutan in it too?
Yeah, both of them. Every Which Way But Loose and Any Which Way You Can. Both very funny movies. Sort of a commentary on country folk in California. At any rate, yeah, Clyde the orangutan. There's a lot there we could go into. I think two different orangutans played him. There were some reports of abuse, which is very unfortunate.
Right turn, Clyde.
But it's right turn. Man, it was dangerous filming that stuff. I mean, that orangutan had the power to just rip a human being up. You know, these things are weird.
I know some orangutans. I had one of my favorite pictures that I ever took was me sitting with an orangutan around the breakfast table. And I went to Singapore back in the 80s, and the Singapore Zoo had this orangutan who was like a few years younger than me. And she was very nice. And you could pay a few dollars and have your picture taken with her. And so in the picture, might have been eating a papaya or something. And I was just sitting there. I didn't have my arm around her, but I was like in the next chair. Of course, a male orangutan's, they're a little bit scarier, and they are just massively powerful.
Well, I wouldn't get within arm's reach of those things. I don't care how tame they are. And people that have these things for pets, like orangutans, tigers, and snakes, oh my! No, these things belong out in the wild.
But the wild disappeared. This is the problem.
That was a nice aside. All of the talk, you know, about Belt and Road, America not being a unipolar power. And I mentioned last night, this overlaps nicely with some eschatological studies that I've been doing in Revelation on my Wednesday night show. And we're setting up for a time when the Middle East or the greater Israel area is a key point between Eurasia and Africa and Western Europe. Of course, the temple is a huge sign, but the globe being under a sort of a one world organization ran by 10 different kingdoms. That's something that I'm looking for. And you know, the UN's talked about dividing up the globe into 10 climate regions, but then there's, you know, you can't necessarily go by that. It's divided the globe up in many different ways. In this scenario, America definitely being one of the kingdoms, Russia, China being kingdoms, and I know for sure you got Syria, Egypt, and Persia, which would be Iran, as being the kingdoms. I don't know. Do you what immediately comes to your mind when I mention that? The globe sort of under one empire, but divided up in 10 ways and 10 powers.
A couple of things. One is Samuel Huntington, was he Jewish or not? I don't know. He was a political scientist, more or less aligned with the neocons back in the 80s and 90s. And he had written a book. Oh, what was it called? Something.
Clash.
Clash of Civilizations. That was called The Clash of Civilizations. And he divided the world into civilizations. Was it 10? You had, Western civilization. You had Orthodox civilization, because he didn't want Russia to be included in Western civilization. You had a Chinese civilization, or was it like
Buddha? I've got it pulled up. Yeah, I've got it pulled up.
Latin America was a civilization unto itself. He had Africa as a civilization, and maybe the Caribbean a civilization unto himself. Could it have been 10? India, the Hindu civilization, Muslim, Islam. It might have been 10. But, go ahead. You got it pulled up.
It's 9, actually. You've got Western, then you got Orthodox, you have Islamist, Buddhist, Hindu, African, Latin America, Cynic, and Japanese. But what he left out on the map here is the entire section of South Africa, which could be a 10th, but he's got 9.
Yeah, and you can divide it up a little bit differently, but as an agnostic, right? My view of these things, and I've been doing I've been listening lately to a series of lectures, university lectures on the New Testament, and there's some theology in it, but then there's also some history, right? So just using non-theological historical records, what do we make of these events? Are they well attested to historically or whatever? One thing is, like, if it wound up being 9 instead of 10, the way I view things, it's like, okay, so whoever wrote down 10, they were, it's close enough, it's close enough. Like, I don't expect that much precision, and 9, well, that's close enough. It's close enough to 10. So those are a couple of my thoughts.
Well, another thing that Huntington did in the Islamic section, he has North Africa and the entire Greater Israel going over to India. That's all one section, whereas the Bible divides that up into 3. The Bible divides that into Egypt being the king of the south, and this is from Daniel 11, Syria being the king of the north, and then Persia being the king of the east. So that's one thing there. If you divided those up, then you would have 3 in the Islamic category.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts you over, let's see, you'd have 9, 10, 11, 12, that would give you 12. But, again, as a person of faith, I believe these prophecies will become exact, and that we'll have a 10 kingdom globe under one government. This is what people like, Mark Dankoff and a lot of the Christians on RBN call, wait for it, the New World Order. They don't understand a world order as you're talking about it politically. They understand it, I'm sure, but they're talking about like a global empire ruled by the Antichrist when they talk about New World Order. And that's why they use that phrase. It's sort of they understand, I'm sure Mark understands, that there's been many world orders, and we're going through a new world order right now of geopolitical realignments. But this is a specific one they're talking about.
Thank you for informing me of that.
That way, when people say New World Order on RBN, you don't have to roll your eyes. You can kind of understand that they're talking about this sinister world order.
Okay, so phrases and words have specific meaning in specific contexts. And yep. So if this is the context that Mark Dankoff is using it in, and that's the way he conceptualizes it, well, okay, who am I to say that he can't use those terms? Alex Jones, I don't think, has the same kind of – well, maybe he does. I don't know, but I don't think so. The way lots of people use it is, you know, with the emphasis on, like, say, George Bush. George Bush doesn't seem to be a very religious character. If I were living 2,000 years ago, even if I could foresee George Bush, father or son, I wouldn't mention him because I think it would be beneath my dignity. So I can't imagine George Bush being in any prophecy.
Of
dignity.
Course, yeah. But well, I mean, Bush the Elder, I mean, we can talk about it. Really, it was Bush the Younger was the dumb one, right? Bush the Elder was probably very intelligent. I mean, he's head of the CIA.
Ralph Nader used to say, and I don't think he ever met Bush the Younger, but he knew Prescott Bush, who was the father of the first George Bush. It was Prescott Bush. He was a banker for like a big Jewish bank. And then he was a banker and then became a senator from Connecticut, and Ralph Nader's from Connecticut. And so Ralph Nader knew Prescott Bush. I guess he must've met the father Bush. I don't think he ever met the younger Bush, even though he ran for president against him, but they weren't going to the same debates. But what Nader said was Prescott Bush was pretty intelligent, but there was a marked decline in cognitive abilities for each generation. So the first George Bush would have been somewhere in between. He would have been like average intelligence. So you went from smart to average to stupid.
Well, I want to get back to this Clash of Civilizations talk, but just to comment on that, Bush the Elder was big in the trilateral, you know, one of the three major global organizations. And I think people make a big deal out of these things. Trilateral, Bilderberger, and CFR. I don't think we should take them lightly, but they are just organizations. They're just powerful people that meet and talk about policy. But it was said that, because, you know, President Bush the Senior was head of the CIA, and then he ran for president. He ended up becoming Reagan's vice, and Reagan was shot just after inauguration. Well, of course, if Reagan had died, then we would have had Bush as president in the early 80s.
By the way, the guy who shot him, John Hinckley, mm-hmm. John Hinckley, I think just like the weekend prior or something, had dinner with, I think was it Melvin Bush? It was one of George Bush's sons. He was friends with one of George Bush's sons. It wasn't George or Jeb. I think it was Melvin. I think there are four Bush sons. I can't remember the other one.
Well, the conspiracy theory here is that Reagan was told that he's got to attend these trilateral meetings, or he's got to be involved somehow and play ball, and he wouldn't do it. And then he was shot. And then after that, he played ball. He let effectively the elder Bush run the administration. That's the conspiracy. I don't know how true it is, but it sounds plausible.
Yeah, I don't, you know, if you look at the powerful people in the Reagan administration, I don't think Bush as vice president was really that important. And I remember the 1988 campaign where Bush was running and eventually won, but he was running in the primaries. His main opponent was Bob Dole in the primaries, and then he ran against Michael Dukakis in the general election. And he really wasn't seen as that strong a candidate or that much of a heavyweight.
Here he comes, here comes Speed Racer. He's a demon on wheels. He's a demon and he's gonna be chasing after someone. Gaining on you, so you better look alive. He's busy revving up the powerful Mach 5. And when the odds are against him and there's dangerous work to do, bet your life's eraser, to see it through. Go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go.
Start your day on RBN with John Moore from 7-10. With coffee cup in hand, wake up with the Liberty Man.
highly qualified guests share their knowledge with the callers Monday through Friday. His website is second to none. It's thelibertyman.com. You'll find everything right there. Start today and be prepared. So give a listen or a call. Tune in weekdays on RBN. Start your day and be prepared. So give a listen or a call. Tune in weekdays on RBN.
Attention, freedom-loving patriots. Are you ready to dive deep into the principles that founded our great nation? Join me, Peter Serafin, and the Institute on the Constitution as we light the way to a brighter future with the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. At liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom, you'll find a treasure trove of online courses on the U.S. Constitution, carefully crafted to empower you with knowledge to defend your rights and liberty. Whether you're a student, a history enthusiast, or just a concerned citizen, these courses are for you. Gain a comprehensive understanding of our Constitution's principles, the wisdom of our founding fathers, and how to apply them in today's world. As a special offer to our freedom-loving listeners of Republic Broadcasting Network, use coupon code RBN at checkout and get 20% discount on any course. Join the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom and be a part of the movement to uphold the values that have made our nation exceptional. Unleash the power of knowledge and protect what truly matters, our Constitution. Visit liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom today. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Use code RBN for 20% off. Together, we'll be the beacon of freedom our founding generation envisioned. Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. Illuminating minds, empowering patriots.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
They've given you a number, and they've taken away your name.
Yeah. Up in the primaries, and then he ran against Michael Dukakis in the general election. And he really wasn't seen as that strong a candidate, or that much of a heavyweight. He wasn't quite the absurd figure that George Bush Jr. was. But one person who was very important in the Reagan administration was Jim Baker. And Jim Baker was somebody that had been, I think, in the first, when Bush, George Bush ran for president against Reagan in the 1980 primaries, Baker was maybe the campaign chairman or something like that. And then when Bush ran in 88 and won, was it in 80? No. When Bush ran in 92 for reelection and lost, Baker took a big role in the I think he resigned as Secretary of State in order to run the campaign those last 6 months. So Baker was really important. But, you know, the big shots in the Reagan administration, because Reagan was old and wasn't that hands-on. So, you know, there were other people, and maybe somebody could make a strong case that Bush was more important than I'm saying. But, you know, you had George Shultz as Secretary of State. You had Caspar Weinberger. You had there's this guy, well, the head of the CIA, who died sometime during the presidency, but his name was William Casey. Casey had been Reagan's campaign manager, and Casey was a big deal as head of the CIA. So you had some people who were, and some people I'm not mentioning, but people who were very big. And you know, Reagan was having early signs of Alzheimer, and he eventually had full onset Alzheimer. You never saw Reagan. Reagan never made any appearances. His last appearance was about 6 months after he left the presidency. He gave a big speech in Tokyo, and that was his last big speech. And then he his Alzheimer's got to be such that he really was, and he left the presidency at age 77 and lived to be about 91 or something. He lived to be at least 90 years old. But, you know, he would just go to the park and watch the dogs play and watch the kids play. And that was it. I mean, this is the last thing I'll say, but have you seen, YouTube has lately been feeding me interviews with former President Nixon. Nixon, you know, he left office and he kept a low profile for a while, but then he started speaking out on stuff and giving interviews. Have you seen any of these interviews with Nixon after he left the presidency?
I've not.
Okay, so maybe it's just the algorithm feeding these to me, but they're pretty interesting. And Nixon was very sharp, but you know, Reagan wasn't. And even when Reagan was president, he was falling asleep at cabinet meetings. It was similar in a way to Biden, except I, as much as I disliked Reagan when he was president, I've given him a much better assessment now in retrospect.
And you're speaking of James Addison Baker III, not to be confused with Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, the televangelists. I'm just putting that out there.
Right. And that Baker, Jim Baker spelled his name with two K's.
Yeah.
I guess it was pronounced.
The reason we brought up Bush the Elder, when he said New World Order in that speech, that was post-Soviet collapse. And what he was talking about was America. Hello. Was America becoming a unipower in light of the fall of the Soviet Union. And on the heels of that, you know, you had the first Iraq conflict. You had Project for a New American Century, which the purpose of which was to create a false flag to get America to go to war in the Middle East and take control of the greater Israel. And then that brings us into Russia gaining power, Putin coming out of left field and becoming prominent again, which I don't think they foresaw that. And that threw a huge wrench in the works of the greater Israel plan. Because with Russia being a power, you're not going to be able to successfully take those. Is it 5 countries in 7 years or 7 countries in 5 years? I think it's 7 and 5.
It was 7 countries. Yeah. That's what Wesley Clark said.
So coming full circle, you look at this map of Samuel Huntington's civilizations map, and you look at the greater Israel area. So this area will be a strategic point, a choke point, just like it was, you know, thousands of years ago under Alexander the Great, connecting Africa and Eurasia and Europe. And for this to be an important point of center of global trade, you're going to have the West decline. That must happen. And I think we're seeing that. So in the eschatological context, one man, what they call the Antichrist, comes in. He goes to war with Syria, Egypt, and Iran. He conquers these three countries. And then he takes this area of the greater Israel, and he sets up a religious capital in Jerusalem, and he sets up a economic and political capital in Babylon, which is current day Iraq on the Euphrates River. And he rules the world from this area. And that's kind of tying all of the talk that we've done about Belt and Road and Israel's interest.
The truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Current day Iraq on the Euphrates River, and he rules the world from this area. And that's kind of tying all of the talk that we've done about Belt and Road and Israel's interest in getting rid of the Palestinians. It kind of ties it all together. Third Temple, Antichrist sits in the Third Temple. So that's where I'm seeing like all of these things fall into peace. And are they self-fulfilling prophecies? Some people say yeah, but I find it very fascinating. And it's interesting to talk with someone like you, because you don't have a biblical lens on things. You're able to view these much more objectively than I am. That's why I valued your opinion on it.
So here's a question. So, you know, you're talking Christian eschatology, and there is Jewish eschatology, which where exactly it stems from, to what extent it stems from the Torah, or you know, the Old Testament, to what extent it stems from, Babylonian Talmud or whatever else, I don't know. But you've got this Jewish eschatology that very much motivates and informs the policies of the current Israeli cabinet, the current government. People like Ben-Gvir, who's the security minister, and Smoltrich, who is the finance minister. And these people are effectively dominating the Netanyahu cabinet. I mean, Netanyahu, I don't think he's particularly religious. I don't know if he's atheist or just kind of mildly secular or what. I don't know. He doesn't really, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to say what he believes, but he's not particularly religious. He does share this goal of, from a nationalist point of view, from a extreme Jewish nationalist / Zionist point of view, he wants to conquer more land and cleanse the land of the people for his own reasons. And these two senior ministers in his cabinet want to do it for escalatical reasons. So the question is, this Jewish eschatology, where does it come from? And to what extent is Christian eschatology a response to, or a reaction to, or in any way connected to Jewish eschatology?
It's in the book, the Law of Moses. You can read in Exodus with and then even in Genesis, when God is giving Abraham this particular land called the Greater Israel, that outlines the borders of it. Now, the book of Joshua states that when Israel took Canaan, they acquired every bit of the land that they were given by God. So they have already taken the land. That prophecy of them getting the land has already been fulfilled. What is this that we see today then? This is a political Israel is a construct of global bankers and politicians that are trying to say that this is the land that Israel owns according to the Old Testament. So it's the roots of it are from Old Testament book law of Moses. They neglect to mention that it's been fulfilled already in Joshua. So Old Testament Israel, which is the real Israel, has already gotten that land promise fulfilled. End of story. So what you're seeing now is a fake Israel, and they're going off of not only these Old Testament prophecies, but also stuff out of the Talmud. And if you want to really read where they get these from, the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion perfectly outline this. And so they don't believe that Jesus was the real Messiah. They're looking for a Messiah to come and, you know, empower them to rule the globe under their Messiah. And what Christians, or what I see anyway, in eschatological terms, is the Antichrist is going to be their Messiah. He's going to be a person of power that takes the greater Israel, sits in the temple, and rules the globe religiously, politically, and economically. And he will strike a deal with them. This is outlined in the book of Daniel, chapter 9. And then the deal is to last for 7 years. It's a 7-year contract that he makes with this political Israel. In the middle of it, he goes against them and he takes full power and then starts destroying them.
Is he a Jew?
From what I can attain from the Bible, he comes from the Mediterranean and he is most likely going to be Assyrian. He comes from the nation of Asher in the Table of Nations in Genesis 10. Mm-hmm. So he'll be Mediterranean is the general answer. No, he's not going to be Jewish. He has a prophet that goes before him outlined in Revelation 13. And it could be that this prophet is Jewish that goes before him. He's called the false prophet. So, you know, in the same way that you had John the Baptist go before Jesus and prepare the way, you're going to have a prophet go before the Antichrist to prepare the people to cause them to worship him. And this is why. So when Christian Zionists look at what's happening in the Middle East, the reason that they're cheering on the Third Temple is they understand this and they see the Third Temple as being a sign that the rapture is about to happen. Now, I think they're wrong on the timing of it. They think the rapture is going to pull them out of the earth and prevent them from this great judgment that's going to fall. And this is why they cheer it on. It's why. And then people like Hagee and, you know, all of the like, have people give them money. They take money from rabbis because they cheer all this on. Hagee secretly telling the Jews that you don't have to go through Jesus. That just the fact that you're Jewish guarantees you a spot in heaven, eternal life. And so they give him money and he promotes this. So, you know, you and I have talked about Christian Zionists aren't really huge movers and shakers. as you know, because there are so many of our politicians that are controlled just by money they get from the Jews, and they don't believe any of this. But Christian Zionism is a result of Jewish power, not a driver of Jewish power. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just one of the many prongs, and it really does drive though the Trump supporting Christians. They really believe, you know, they see this.
But, yeah. Okay.
But it's got to cause some sort of it's confusion, because the Third Temple is going to be evil, but yet they're giving money to support it. So you know the end never justifies the means. If you're a moral person, a Christian morals. And so you can't support something evil just because you think it's going to bring something good.
I have a question. So the so-called Christian, what do we call them? The Christian evangelicals. This group, what proportion of them care more about supporting Israel than they care about banning abortion? What's the relative importance of these issues to them?
From the people that I've talked to, supporting Israel is the top amongst these, what you're calling evangelicals. Now, Christian Zionists is a better label for them, even though that's a contradictory term. Well, let's just call them Zionists. But because an evangelical, that word simply means messenger. You know, mm-hmm. that has the word angel in it, and I'm an evangelical. I'm a messenger for Christ. So I just wanted to make, you know, get our terms straight. But a lot of these Zionists that call themselves Christians, abortion is second on the list, even though it's very important to them, because most of them agree with some type of abortion, like in the case of the health of the mother or rape. The majority of them, mm-hmm. especially the women. But support of Israel is top. It tops abortion.
Does it?
That's why Trump can be, you know, can tip his hat to the abortion crowd, which is what he's doing, you know, to get more support from the more moderate Republicans. But then, you know, he's all out for Israel. So we asked, did Trump learn anything? Yeah, he learned how to be a politician. He learned how to get more than just the anti-war crowd that's against immigration. He's learned how to tell everyone what they want to hear.
Mm.
And that's a scary thing.
Okay. So now I'm sure you, the church you go to, they're not saying we need to go to war for Israel and, you know, blessed are the people who bless Israel and this and that, right?
Not the one that I've been going to. There was one I was going to that wasn't as bad, and I was able to influence them quite a bit. But I'm currently attending what's called a Reformed Baptist Church, and they are not pro-Israel. They don't even, they believe similar to that I do, that the Old Testament Israel has already fulfilled these prophecies, and that what you're seeing now is a political construct.
And so how big is that way of thinking in Bible Belt America?
It's been always a minority, but it's growing. You're getting more of these Reformed people. Some people in this circle call themselves Calvinists. Now, I'm not a Calvinist. I don't agree with the writings or the beliefs of John Calvin or Martin Luther. But I do consider myself a Reformed Baptist, because I think the church needs to be reformed, and it should constantly be reforming. And this is a major point of reformation that it needs to take, is get out of this Israel worship. Mm-hmm. So it's growing. To answer your question, it's a minority, but it's growing. Unfortunately, a lot of these people adhere to the works of John Calvin.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. So just a little history on that. John Calvin was a reformer in Europe, French, contemporary with Luther, who was German, and Zwingli in Switzerland. And so it was basically a power grab, is what it was. Instead of the Catholic Church having power, they took power. You know, they wanted the people to give them power and money. and Calvin became governor of Geneva and instituted a lot of harsh, he ruled with a rod of iron, basically, had people executed that disagreed with his beliefs. And Calvinism theologically states that God chose those who he would have to be born again and did not chose the lost. He chose them before the foundation of the earth, and that there is no choice that mankind has. Mankind's faith can only be given by God. Now, there's a lot of biblical overlap with this, because when you get down to did God choose or did man choose, I mean, I think that God is the ultimate arbitrator here. He's the one that chooses. He does not look into the future and learn something. He determines the future. But these guys kind of take it way further than that. So that's the difference in what we would call a Calvinist and a regular Protestant. Some people lump all Protestants into Calvinism, but that's not true. You know, Mark Dankoff is a Lutheran, but he's not a Calvinist. He is a Reformed Christian, though. But he would look at salvation a little bit differently than that. We're getting really into some religious stuff. Did you want to go this route?
We could. I brought it up because so much of what's going on in Israel is motivated by Jewish eschatology. And, you know, what's going on there, you've got this big split between much more secular Jews and the religious fanatics. Unfortunately, Judge Napolitano, who's just not very well informed on these things, he's referring to the religious Jews as Zionists. And Zionism was not founded by religious Jews. It was founded by secular Jews who were seeking a Jewish nationalism. Religious Zionism is a thing, and these people who are in the cabinet can be called religious Zionists and call themselves religious Zionists, but religious Zionism didn't really get started until after the State of Israel was established or around that time. Unfortunately, Napolitano uses the term Zionist to mean religious fanatic, which it's not. And these, you know, the, Netanyahu and other people in Israel are Zionists. Zionism simply means Jews going to the Middle East and claiming this area as their own. That's what Zionism is. It's that kind of movement. So I brought it up, but you know, one of the things that's interesting about it is the very religious people, they don't want to join the army, and but that doesn't necessarily mean they don't want to fight. There are these in the settlers, who are very well armed, they have militia, and the militia, they're not part of the army. They're not part of the command structure. So you've got this independent, autonomous military organization. And Smoltridge also commands, I guess, the police and some security forces as well. And one last thing I'm going to say before I kick it back to you is these settlers, you know, they refer to the land that they're seizing from the Palestinians as Judea. And what does Judea mean to if you're a very religious Jew? What does Judea mean to you as opposed to Israel?
I mean, it just sounds like to them, Judea is like an overall term that you would use for the promised land. Really, it biblically comes from the tribe of Judah, which Jesus hailed from. And it would include Jerusalem, Bethlehem, that little area there. It's just one of the 12 tribes. But they're referring to it as like the whole area of the promised land, because you wouldn't consider Judea up in the area of Palestine, of the Palestinians. But you said that the Jews are influencing Netanyahu and that he maybe is not particularly religious. I think Netanyahu sees the greater Israel as a point of strategy in light of the Belt and Road and the Eurasian shift. And that's why he's interested. And he's more than glad to cater to these religious zealots and get their third temple because it empowers him. So while Christian Zionism doesn't necessarily empower the Jewish movement in America, it's a result of the Jewish movement. I think you could say that Jewish Zionism, religious zealots, empower politics in Israel. I think, would you make that case then?
Well, right now they're in the driver's seat.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it. Contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
Jewish Zionists, religious zealots, empower politics in Israel. I think, would you make that case then?
Well, right now they're in the driver's seat.
Mm-hmm. And so you have two different interests, because the religious zealots are wanting to usher in their Messiah. And once they lay claim to this land and build his temple, then he will come. If you build it, he will come. That's from some movie about baseball with Kevin Costner.
Right.
And they're going to be welcoming in the Antichrist from the Christian perspective.
Mm-hmm. And these people are in Israel. We've got the settler movement, and like I said, 30% of the settlers, it's my understanding, about 30% of them have U.S. passports, have dual U.S. citizenship, as opposed to only 10% of Israeli Jews in general. But on the other hand, the settlers tend to be they tend to be more religious. And but then also you've got in the Netanyahu coalition, you've got the non-European Jews. So there are a lot of Jews who were in the Middle East already. They were in the Middle East before Zionism. That not necessarily right in the areas that are now controlled by Israel. They may have been in Iraq, they may have been in Syria or Iran or Yemen or other places, but they were in the Middle East, and they don't follow the Ashkenazi rites and liturgy. And traditionally, they have not been the dominant political force in Israel, but right now they are. And the dominant political force has been these European or American Jews who are tend to be more secular. And a lot of these people, they like having Israel there with, it's got Tel Aviv is right on the Mediterranean. So it's got nice beaches. It's just kind of a nice place to be with your homies, right, with all your Jewish homies. And they don't particularly care about the Third Temple or other things. Israel. So we're pretty much at the end of the show, but things are going really badly for Israel. And whether the future is what myself or Jeffrey Sachs are predicting, a settlement imposed on Israel that cuts it back down to pre-67. Borders and therefore dismantles the settlements and all sorts of other stuff, or what people like Scott Ritter are predicting, Scott Ritter or I guess Larry Johnson, that Israel just ceases to exist altogether. Its future is more precarious than anybody could have even imagined a couple of years ago. So we're about to sign off. You have any final thoughts, Jeremy?
Yeah, Netanyahu, it was prophesied by Rabbi Rebbe in the 80s that Netanyahu would usher in the Jewish Messiah. And I think was it Schneerson?
Was it Schneerson, the Lubavitch Rebbe?
Yes. And so that's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy in the mind of Netanyahu. He may not be religious himself, but he's using that momentum and power to gain the greater Israel and genocide these Palestinians.
Okay, well, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Patrick. Stay classy, my friend.
I will do my best, and I'll be back again tomorrow with a very special celebration of Michael Jackson's life featuring David Duke, his number one fan. So I'll see you tomorrow.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pauti Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network.
because you can handle the truth.